Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the ships at sea. Welcome to Travel Talk Radio with your hosts, Bob and Sandy Nesoff. Sandy is on assignment today, and we'll be handling it by ourselves. Our guest this evening is Howard J. Schwach, quite a renaissance man. He was an educator, he was a journalist, and now he's an author. And you folks may remember about 2 months and a day after 9/11, there was a horrific plane crash in the Rockaway Peninsula near Manhattan in New York. Howie has written a novel on it called American 587 Heavy. Howie, good evening. How are you?
Good evening. How are you, Bob?
Okay. Tell us about your book, American 587 Heavy. I assume heavy means that it's a loaded aircraft.
Yeah, that was the designation for the airplane given by the FAA. So all the call signs from air traffic control designated as American 587 Heavy.
Okay. What factored into your decision to write this book?
Well, when it happened, I was the editor of the local newspaper, The Wave, and I lived only a block away from the crash, and my son and my daughter-in-law and my grandson, there was only one then, lived at the end of the same block where the plane crashed. So I was driving on the way to work. I had just started at the newspaper and retired as a New York City teacher in April and taken over the paper. And here it was September. When I took over the paper, the past editor told me that nothing big ever happened in Rockaway. And, of course, then we had September 11th, and then we had on November 12th the airplane crash. I heard it on a scanner. I kept a scanner radio in the car tuned to the police frequency, and I heard the first call come in. You know, we have a heavy aircraft down in Rockaway Park. And I turned around, and I saw a roll of smoke. So I went down there, and I was right on the scene and inside the frozen zone. So as reporters came, the police kept them a couple of blocks away, but I was right there with my cameras. So
I saw you were already in there, and they didn't chase you.
And they didn't even know I was there. It was too hectic. I sold a couple of pictures to Associated Press, and I was there until finally a sergeant who I knew from the 100th Precinct saw me there and said, you know, what are you doing here? Get out. But then, up until then, I had it all to myself.
Okay, the journalist's dream, exclusive on a major story.
It really was an international story that only I had. So even though it was a tragedy, I was there.
Yeah. So what made you decide to write this or turn it into a novel?
Well, I started writing it as a nonfiction, as a factual book. You know, of course, I knew more about it almost than anybody else. I was there from the beginning. I interviewed, you know, people who saw it. I interviewed people who lived in the area. I interviewed the FAA and the NTSB. So I started writing it as a factual book using my notes, the stories that I had written. And also I had gotten close to the families of a number of the people who died, including the first officer who was flying the plane that day. So I thought I would like to do it in their memory. But I wrote about 6 or 7 chapters, and I realized it was pretty boring. But that I still wanted to write the book. So I turned it into a novel and invented some characters and the terrorists and some of the other stuff.
Well, I know most of the locations that you mentioned are places that you know firsthand, from restaurants to a church to schools and what have you. What about the characters in the book? How many of the characters are based on real people, aside from the editor of the local newspaper?
Well, the local newspaper, of course, was me. And my son was a police lieutenant, so he kind of became the cop. And
You demoted him to sergeant.
I demoted him, and it was funny because when my daughter-in-law read the book, she said to me, how come you have him having an affair and you don't have me in the book? So it just worked out better that way. And most of the people who were witnesses and the meeting that we had are factual.
Tell us about that meeting.
Well, I would call, I was getting a lot of calls, and I decided I would have a meeting of all the witnesses, and I would invite the FAA and the NTSB to come to the meeting, and all the newspapers and TV stations. The only one who showed up was a Newsday reporter who wasn't even on the aviation beat but covered Rockaway on a regular basis, so she came. But we had a lot of people who actually saw it in the air on fire or saw an explosion. And most of them were cops and firefighters. Rockaway, we have a lot of retired firefighters. In fact, we lost 70 people on 9/11, and most of them were firefighters. I really believe what they had to say. And we also had the father of the guy who was flying the plane, Stan Nolan, who was also a pilot for Eastern Airlines and knew all about flying and taught his son to fly. So he came and told things about his son and about the airplane and model, actually a model of the plane that it was flown, the Airbus.
Let me ask you this, Howie. It was declared an accident, and if I remember correctly, they did blame the co-pilot on it for mishandling it, and that's why the father came down, even as you show it in your book. Do you personally think that this was an accident?
Well, no, I think it was an accident, but I don't think it was the first officer's problem. After doing a lot of research and calling Airbus in Europe and speaking with, there was a reporter, I don't remember his name now, from Der Spiegel, which is kind of the German version of Newsweek magazine. And he gave me a line on several other A300, 600s, the type of plane it was, that it had problems with the tail. On one, the stewardess broke her back because the tail started to swing back and forth. There was a plane that took off from France and crashed into the Mediterranean. There was a plane that took off from Cuba, and its tail fell off on takeoff, but it got safely back to the airport. So there were 8 or 9 times when that particular type of aircraft had trouble with the tail. And as I did my research, I found that it was the first aircraft that had where the tail wasn't bolted to the fuselage. To save weight, it was several layers of a glue-type material that held the tail to the fuselage. And later on...
You're saying that on an aircraft carrying 260-some-odd people, it glued it together?
Absolutely. And in fact, some of the planes, some of the Airbus today still use that. They found they took apart an A300-600 that was flying for FedEx, and they found that if the fuel lines leaked, if the avionics lines leaked, that it disbonded the glue that held the tail together. So they had to replace all the tails. But they wouldn't admit, they blamed it on the first officer. Now, I spoke to the Pilots Association, and I got their president, and he told me that building a plane where the tail falls off when you over-control the rudder is like building a car where if you hit the brakes, the tires blow up. And I used that
makes
line.
Sense.
And So I believe it was an accident, and that there may have been some wake turbulence, and that the co-pilot used the rudder. But you know what? If I was driving with you in a car, and it was your car, and you were letting me drive, and I started going back and forth all over the road, what would you do? Would you say something?
Probably grab the wheel.
Yeah, or at least say, hey, don't do that. This thing in the voice recorder, this is any indication that the pilot said anything to the guy who was flying, except, are you all right? Have you got it? That was his only words that indicated that there might have been some problem. But I think, personally, I think that the tail fell off on takeoff, and we were lucky that the plane all get in and hits going straight down rather than a flat landing. I gotta thank the pilot for that, because it only took out 5 or 6 houses rather than leveling the whole neighborhood.
Well, this is not the book that you want to read while you're flying on an airplane, but it is a good book to take along and read on a trip when you're in a hotel or when you have some downtime.
No, it definitely isn't. In fact, my book, I went to Israel with my daughter last October, and the book had just come out. So I took a couple of copies to give to the rabbi and some other people. And one of the people read it, got sick in Israel. It was in the hotel one night, and she read it. And she said, I don't want to get on the plane tomorrow to go home.
Oh, excuse me. How deep was the actual investigation into the attack?
Well, it was very deep. If you can get it online, you can see the investigation. But, you know, they investigated the materials, they investigated the pilots and everybody. But when it came to they included in the docket, which is what they call it, the people who actually saw it happen, they were given to us at the meeting. I gave them copies, and they actually included that in the docket. But at the beginning, they said these are witness statements, but witnesses aren't reliable to an accident like this.
Right.
Because
eyewitnesses
are not reliable, because they've seen movies and things, and they, without even thinking, they impress what they saw in the movies on the actual crash. And therefore, they actually think they think they saw an explosion, and they think they saw a fire, but they really didn't. And I don't believe that for a minute. Especially since a great majority of them were police and firemen who saw accidents and fire and death all the time. It was kind of
it's the same thing as when Air Force fighter pilots or passenger plane pilots spot so-called UFOs.
Right.
And they get brushed off. And these are people who are not going to jeopardize their careers by making something up. And Howie, we're going to have to pause for a moment now while we have a couple of commercials. Ladies and gentlemen, we're on Travel Talk Radio. We are interviewing author Howard Schwach on his book, American 587 Heavy. We will be back in just over a moment.
What do we got?
Captain, there's no sign of him anywhere. Dogs aren't picking up anything. I'll flush him out.
Red Robin! Yum!
Answer the call at Red Robin with an Oktoberfest burger. Fire grilled and topped with Black Forest ham, melted Swiss and beer mustard onions on a pretzel bun. Served with bottomless steak fries.
Red Robin. Yum.
Black is back, and only at Quiznos. It's the Black Angus on Rosemary Parmesan. Quality, thick sliced Black Angus steak topped with melted mozzarella and cheddar. Try it. You're gonna like it. Quiznos. Toasty.
How do you make a tasty sub? There's the Quiznos way, and there's wrong way.
Hello.
Quiznos uses meat sliced fresh daily.
Wrongway uses shingle pack meats in a bag. Quiznos uses bread made especially for toasting. At Wrongway. And now, fresh out of the Quiznos oven, is our new peppercorn parmesan turkey with bacon sub. Only $3.49 for a... What the? For a limited time only at Quiznos.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Travel Talk Radio. Our guest this evening is Howard Schwach, a former teacher, a journalist, who served in the Navy, I believe, on an aircraft carrier. And he knows what he's talking about when he describes aircraft and what have you. We're discussing his book, American 587 Heavy, which crashed into the Rockaway Peninsula of New York City's Queensborough, I believe 2 months and one day after 9/11. Is that correct, Howie?
Yes. In fact, a lot of people really panicked because they thought it was another terrorist attack. And we had had a Rockaway firefighter who had been on the national television when they had a show about 9/11 and said that Osama bin Laden could kiss his Irish Rockaway ass. And a lot of people, there was a lot of notes going around and that Osama bin Laden had the plane brought down in Rockaway to get even with him for saying that.
Okay. How can people get hold of your book?
Well, they can buy it. It's on Amazon. It's available in a couple of local bookstores. But there's a Kindle version. It's a different name. The Kindle version is called Flight 587 Down, because they didn't want me to use the same name on the Kindle book as they did on the published book for some reason. So they can get it on. They can get it there, and I think they really will enjoy it. It's got a lot of real life stuff in it, and it's got a lot of conjecture in it, and it's just an interesting, you know, cops and terrorists story. It's actually,
Why don't you give us a brief overlook of the book without giving the ending away?
Yeah, well, the ending is, you know, the ending is the beginning, the crash. And the book kind of posits that there was, the terrorists took down the plane with a missile, and I described the local area and where it was fired from and everything, and that a man had come out of his apartment to pick up the paper and saw it. But he could not report it to anybody because he had disappeared from the World Trade Center 2 months earlier and wanted everybody to think he was dead so that he could get away from his wife and his job and live with his girlfriend. So he couldn't just come out and say, hey, I saw this. And in fact, he had videotaped it on his phone because then everybody would know he was alive. But he does call the local newspaper and anonymously tell them that he saw it. Meanwhile, there are a couple of detectives, local detectives, who just get a feeling that things are wrong, and they start to investigate. And they finally come up with the fact that there was somebody who called the paper, and they check the paper's pen register that tells the incoming calls, and they find this guy at the night of the meeting, right after the meeting. And the editor goes to him, and he finally gives the editor permission to show them the video. And so, but the government wants to cover it up. The government feels that if the NTSB and the FAA, that if people know that after the planes that crashed into the World Trade Center, that they brought down another plane, they'd be afraid to fly. So the government tries to cover it up and stop the police from investigating. But the police and the DA get together, and they actually arrest these guys trying to crash another
plane. Let's
not
give too much of the book away. People have got to have some mystery when they read it.
Yeah.
And again, how can people pick up the book?
It's on Amazon.com, and it's on Kindle as Flight 587 Down. Kindle didn't like American 587 because they said it didn't identify it as a plane. So they, for their categorizing, they wanted Flight 587 on it.
All right. So how much did your background in the Navy and on the aircraft carrier factor into your knowledge that you put into the book?
Well, it did. Of course, I saw a lot of airplanes in the 3 years, but I was a court reporter in the Navy. And one of my jobs as a court reporter was to record what they call the green board, the accident investigations on the ship. They would get a group of officers together and find out why there was accidents. And we lost 13 people on a peacetime cruise, including a doctor who was out earning his flight pay when the plane crashed off the carrier. And we had another plane, a four-plane unit, dropping bombs on a bombing site, and they went too low. The first plane dropped the bomb. Second plane came down after them and got blown out of the air by the first guy's bomb.
Oh, gee.
I did a lot of those. I did a dozen of those investigations. So I was pretty familiar with airplanes and with how the investigations go. And that helped me not believe, the NTSB kept giving me these stories and they made no sense to me. So I knew that
okay,
it was
well,
more
sounds,
than
it just, sounds like you really factored into it. Plus the fact that you as you said, you lived in that area in Bell Harbor where the plane
uh-huh.
came down right near your home. And
yep.
you put in restaurants and catering halls and what have you that you had a personal familiarity with. How long have you lived in the Rockaways?
I was born here, so just short of 80 years.
Okay.
I was away for a little while writing for Weekly Reader. Some of your older listeners might remember Weekly Reader. I was an editor for them, and I lived in Connecticut when I did that. But other than that, in the time in the Navy, I've lived in Rockaway all my life.
Okay. Do planes still fly that same pattern over the peninsula now, or have they been shifted to a safer route?
No, they still fly. You know, for a while, who has been our representative, got the FAA to move the flights so that they flew what they call the bridge route. I know people who are familiar with the area would know what that means. They flew out of Kennedy Airport on 31 left, and instead of coming over the peninsula on their way to a waypoint out in the aisle, out at sea, a waypoint, they flew right straight out over the bay into the Atlantic Ocean and then turned around and went to the waypoint. But I guess gas is expensive and time is expensive, and that was another, 8 or 9 minutes. So they turned and came. They declared emergencies, or they said the wind is bad, or so that they could fly right over Rockaway. And they still do, and now it's even worse. They're fixing one of the runways so that the A380s, those big, biggest planes, can land and take off safely. So they have planes coming in all the time over the east end of the peninsula on a regular basis when they never had them before, and they're coming lower and lower. And they're getting bigger and bigger.
What kind of research did you do for this book?
Well, I covered it. I mean, you're a journalist, too, so you know what covering a story means. So I spoke to almost everybody involved, maybe 25 people who saw the crash, the FAA, the NTSB. And then I read the whole story. I read the flight recorder and the voice recorder. I did, I read that whole transcript a dozen times. And then I interviewed the lawyers who were involved in the actual lawsuits and the family members who were involved in the lawsuit and the pilots, father and sister, and just about everybody else involved. And, I did research on other airplane crashes that involved the A300, which, by the way, are used now only by cargo. They're not used by anybody in American Airlines on the Dominican Islands run, Dominican Republic run, and by FedEx and UPS. Other than that, they don't fly people anymore.
I will say this. Howie and I should say this for the audience, full disclosure, Howie and I have known each other for quite a number of years. I lived in the peninsula also, kind of in the middle of it. I remember when the first jet plane landed at Kennedy, which was then Idlewild Airport.
Yeah.
And I know how low they would fall. My house was right on Jamaica Bay, or right across the street from Jamaica Bay. And I know how low the planes were when they were taking off and coming in. And you could almost count the rivets on them when they
yeah,
came
yeah.
by.
The worst was the Concorde. I don't know if you were there when the Concorde
was. I saw them. I was in a plane when the Concorde, we had to stop to let the Concorde take off.
Yeah, it was loud. Low and loud.
Yep. Howie, you have another book in the works. What's the theme and when does it do?
Yeah, I do. It's called The Masada Complex, and it will be out in a month. And it will also be on Amazon and Kindle. And the book is about a group of elderly Jewish tourists who fly to Israel on a congregational trip with their rabbi and other people from the synagogue. And one of the people on the trip is the boyfriend of a woman who's at the synagogue, and he's a retired New York City detective. And he identifies this guy who's watching the group. It just doesn't seem right. And he sees him at Kennedy, and then he sees him again at the first couple of places they go in Israel. And he gets suspicious of him, and he snaps a picture of them with his cell phone camera. And one of the other people on the trip has a couple, has a grandson who's Israel Defense Forces officer who comes to visit them and have dinner. And he shares his thoughts with the officer, and it turns out that something is going on. So they agree to be a kind of decoys for the people that are trying to kidnap them. And I'll leave it at that. It winds up on Masada, rescue on Masada, and then the death of one of the guys in front of the Western Wall. So it's got the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in it, the Western Wall, Tel Aviv, you know, all sorts of places.
Yeah, and I think the advice that every writing instructor or coach that we've ever had has always said, write about what you know. And I could see that in
yep.
American 580 Heavy. You know the place, and I know you have a copy of my book, and I'm sure you'll recognize a couple of places
yep.
in that as well.
And yep,
now in your new book, and the name of the new book
it.
Is the Masada what?
Complex.
Masada Complex. I'm sure the readers will find that there are a lot of places in there that if they've been to Israel, they will recognize as well.
Anybody who's been to Israel, will, you know, all the usual places are in there. The Dead Sea
yeah.
and you know, all those places.
Okay.
Actually, I don't know if you remember. Oh,
go
okay.
ahead, I'm sorry.
I don't know if you remember this, but you helped me get into post-college. You remember?
I remember that. I remember that we commuted together for a long time.
Yes. Well, I went out there to take a ride with you and wound up signing up. So you changed my life.
We'll discuss that another time.
Okay.
Our guest this evening has been Howard J. Schwach, who is author of American 587 Heavy. It's called A Novel of Terrorism and Betrayal, which takes the crash of the American 587 jumbo jet crashing in the Rockaway Peninsula, and whether or not there was a government cover-up. Was it terrorism? Well, read the book and you'll find out. Howie, thank you very much for joining us this evening, and we wish you much success with your books.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Bob. You too.
Be well.
And have a good night.
Thanks, you too. Ladies and gentlemen, join us again next week for Travel Talk Radio, and we hope to hear you on the radio. Bye.
Are we off?